So Matthew 18:15-35. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault, just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. I tell you the truth. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there am I with them. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to seven times? Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me, and I will pay you back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I cancelled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant, just as I had on you? In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart.
Thanks, Aaron. Good morning, friends. It's good to be with you this morning. Let me add my welcome to that of Dean's. As Dean said, we're doing a short little series at the moment, 4 weeks looking at what I love about Jesus. And there's lots to love about Jesus. Of course, he brings us reconciliation with God. He deals with our sin at the cross. But one of the things I love about Jesus, he helps us to do life and work out real life in this world. And so the passage that we're looking at this morning is a real help for that. I can't think of a more practical passage, really, where Jesus teaches us how to deal with forgiveness and reconciliation with people. Because reality is, for all of us, either we are currently going through or we have experienced times where people have hurt us deeply, and that has caused great pain in our life. And it happens to us all the time. It happens in our marriages. It happens for students, whether it be at school. It happens in the workplace. It happens between parents and children. And, of course, it happens in churches. And so a really practical teaching here from Jesus about how to do life and how to work out life in this world. Now, when we hurt others and others hurt us, of course, it robs us of joy, doesn't it? We're made to be in relationships and we're made to relate with others, And it's in the context of relating with people that we actually get to experience the real joys of life. Things like love and laughter and happiness, things like empathy and kindness and care are all experienced in the context of relationships. And when we hurt others or when others hurt us, it robs us of that joy of life that we ought to experience. It's great pain that undermines our relationships and takes away the joy of life. But that doesn't mean we have to put up with fractured relationships. What we see in the passage today is Jesus gives us a mechanism to deal with the resources and the power to forgive and to reconcile with others, to restore broken and fractured relationships, to return to the point where we can continue to experience the joy of relationships that we meant to and ought to enjoy with others, even after they've been broken and hurt. Of course, the problem is, however, too often we're unwilling to forgive and to reconcile, isn't it? People hurt us, and it hurts our pride, it hurts our dignity, our self-esteem, it hurts our reputation, and so we get angry. And so our natural reaction often is to say, no, I don't want to forgive. I can't forgive. It's hurting too much. But friends, there are two problems when we're unwilling to forgive and reconcile. First of all, is it hurts you. It hurts you in two ways. It hurts you now, and it hurts you eternally. They see in this parable how the servant is forgiven by the king, but the servant refuses to allow to forgive a fellow servant. And so we see there in verse 34, the king hears about it. He hauls the first servant back in front of him, and in his anger, he turns the servant over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. And the punchline from Jesus is there in verse 35. He says to those who are listening, this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from the heart. Wow. That's pretty blunt from Jesus, isn't it? His point is, I think what he's making here is if you have an unforgiving heart, well, it's going to lead you to eternal suffering. It's very blunt. But you might say, well, hey, hang on. We're saved by grace. We're saved by the gospel. We're saved by Jesus' death and resurrection. Surely it doesn't depend on how well I forgive or not. Well, yes, that's absolutely true. However, the king's point to the servant here is this. When you fail to forgive, when you fail to open your heart to your fellow servant, what you're failing to do is recognize the mercy that I've shown you. And Jesus is saying to us, if you fail to forgive your friend or your neighbor or your spouse or a fellow student or a person here at church or a colleague at work, this is a sign that you've not really opening your heart to the truth of the gospel. Imagine two trees in an orchard, an apple tree. One tree is full of fruit, full of apples. Another tree has no leaves and no fruit. What do you conclude about those two trees? Well, you conclude that the first one is healthy, it's alive. The second one, you conclude, well, it's diseased and dying or dead. Now, of course, the fruit doesn't give the trees life, does it? The fruit is a sign of life of that tree. It's a symbol. It's indicative whether the tree is alive or not. And Jesus is saying there's no better way to see whether you have a real relationship with God, whether you've understood and appropriated the gospel for yourself, as to whether you're willing to forgive others or not. So there's the first problem, that failing to forgive others, it hurts you eternally. The second problem is that unwillingness to forgive, it hurts you now. Like when you fail, when you don't want to forgive and you don't want to reconcile, you just build up with this sort of trap. You're feeling trapped and ensnared and burdened by it. You feel angry. You've got this grudge you're holding and carrying around. And what happens then? Well, we feel bitter, and we have this residual anger that continues to burn within us. We become passive aggressive towards those who have hurt us. And you end up being imprisoned by your own anger and hurt. Unable to let go, unable to move on. Unable to have any peace or joy in life that we should. And so you become a prisoner of your unwillingness or inability to forgive. And so we see, friends, there's a real problem with forgiveness. We know we ought to, but it hurts. We've been hurt, right? But, and it means so often we just are unwilling to forgive. And the problem is it leads to suffering as we harbor anger and bitterness, and it leads to future suffering as we show we haven't truly understood the gospel. So what do you do with that? We know it's better to forgive. We know it's better to reconcile. How do we go about it? Well, the parable that Aaron read for us from Matthew chapter 18 really helps us. See, in the parable, the king calls in a servant who owes him a huge amount, and he forgives him. You see that what he does there in verse 27? The master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go. Notice he does two things. He takes pity on the man, and he cancels the debt and lets him go. The first thing he does is he takes pity. And that's more than just feeling sorry for him. That's the idea there is having compassion on the man. There's an empathy for the servant. Elsewhere in the New Testament, this phrase is translated, his heart went out to him. That's a sort of a really helpful idiom there that captures the sense of what's being said here. His heart went out for this servant. He means he was putting himself in the servant's place. He was identifying with him. And so to have pity, to have compassion is for one's heart to go out for a person, to identify with a person, to empathize with that person, even though they've hurt you and wronged you. And that's hard, but to do that, to empathize or to identify with a person is to do that hard work of putting yourself in their place and seeing how much you have in common. And so when you can do that, then you're in that position to empathize and have compassion. I'm sure those of you who are parents, I know that parenting is not easy. I reckon it's the hardest job in the world. I reckon my kids would agree. I know when I've done the wrong thing, sorry, when my kids have done the wrong thing, without a shadow of a doubt, that the times when I've parented them the best and I've parented well is when my heart's gone out for them, when I've empathized with them. And I've shown compassion towards them. The times I haven't done it well is the times I've failed to do that. And the difference is when I remember just how much I have in common with them. When I remember either when I was a kid, I did exactly the same thing, or even as an adult, I'm still doing that just in adult ways. And when God helps me to see that, I'm able to look at them with compassion and my heart can go out to them, and we're able to reconcile and restore in a much healthier way. Now, as you know, Ben loves to draw a lot. He loves to do caricatures. The thing about caricatures is they always highlight an aspect about a person and draws attention to that thing about a person, doesn't it? It sort of overemphasizes something. Even if they're trying to be kind, it just naturally overemphasizes something about a person, as evidenced by this caricature he did of me recently, which is not at all flattering. But you get the point. The caricatures overemphasize an attribute of a person, right? We can often caricature people who hurt us. We overemphasize a caricature about them or the thing that they've done, and we characterize and say, that's what they're like. So if someone says something or does something unkind to you, you know, we respond and go, oh, they're a bully. And someone says to you, oh, really? What'd they do to you? Oh, they're just a bully. Why are they doing it? Oh, they're a bully. Oh, have you ever been unkind to anyone? Oh, yeah, well, yeah, it was complicated. There were circumstances and, you know, that was different. And so we never say when we're mean, we never characterize ourselves as bullies, but when other people are mean to us, oh, they're a bully. And we characterize it, right? I'm human. I'm three-dimensional. There were circumstances. But for others, no, we just caricature them, right? And we fail to let our heart go out from. We fail to get along to and recognize that we're similar. And what we need to do when our heart goes out is to say, I'm not that different. In many ways, we're pretty similar. One theologian says of this idea of forgiveness, says, forgiveness flounders because I exclude my enemy from the community of humanity and I exclude myself from the community of sinners. I'll say that again. Forgiveness flounders because I exclude my enemy from the community of humanity and I exclude myself from the community of sinners. That's such a helpful point, isn't it? We'll be unable to forgive people if we continue to think that we're superior to them and we forget that we too are sinners. Now, we may not do exactly the same thing, but we probably do similar things. We may have done the similar thing in the past, or given the right circumstances, we would probably do that as well. And when we exclude others from the community of humanity, we're failing to recognize that they too are a person with baggage and hurts and pain and brokenness. And when we fail to recognize those two things, friends, then it holds us back from taking pity, showing compassion, and our heart going out to them. And what ends up happening is we become bitter and pain and full of pain and sadness. So that's what the first thing the king does is he has compassion. His heart goes out to the servant. The second thing he does is he cancels the debt and lets him go. He calls him in, and turns out the servant owes a lot of money, 10,000 talents. Now, to give you some perspective here, a talent in those days was worth 6,000 denarii. A denarii was a Roman coin, and a denarii was basically a day's wage. So if we say an average wage today is $300, you sort of multiply that out, 6,000 denarii, 10,000 talents, that's $18 billion this guy owes the king. All right, to give you some perspective of that, James Packer, he's worth $6 billion. So this guy owes the king three times the amount of James Packer's worth, okay? A lot of money. The servant, we see in verse 25, is unable to pay, as you would expect. And so the whole family's ordered it to be sold into slavery and all the man's possessions sold off. Now, of course, the reality is doing that, selling the family off and selling the possessions, was never going to cover the debt. The cost of a slave in those days, or the price of a slave, was at best one talent, normally a tenth of that or less. So selling off the man's family and selling his possessions was just never going to cover it. It'd be like me saying to a judge, oh, you can take my pay for the next 40 years to pay this $18 billion debt. I don't earn that much, let me tell you. You know that. So it's just not going to happen. This guy is never going to be able to pay off the debt. And so he's in a desperate plight. And so he begs for mercy. And surprisingly, the king takes pity on him and cancels his debt. And I say surprisingly because to do so, it means the king has to forgo or absorb or bear the loss of that $18 billion. That's a big loss that the king has to absorb to forgive him. But friends, that's what forgiveness is. It's actually absorbing the cost that's incurred to you rather than making others pay. Now, my in-laws, they just sold it, but they used to have a four-wheel drive and a caravan that they would lend us to go on holidays, and we took it to Tasmania over the Easter break. So I drove down to Melbourne, ferry across to Tassie, two-week trip around Tassie, ferry back and drove home. And when we got home, you know, so did the whole trip, not a scratch. No issues, no dramas, no dings. Excellent. Very happy about that. Get home, clean up the car and the caravan, park the four-wheel drive on the grass, off the street, out of the way, waiting for them to come pick it up. That night was that night we had the massive storm in Sydney. You know, the night where the Premier said, go home early, don't go out. You know, it's just horrendous. It's really dangerous. And we have this basketball ring outside the front of our house, right, on a stand. And what happens? It gets blown over, bang, into the car. And ding, in the front panel of the car. And so we tell my in-laws about it. And they let it go. They just cancelled the debt. Now, because they forgave me, you know, we offered to pay, but because they forgave us doesn't mean that the cost disappears into thin air. Either they have to bear the cost and go and get it repaired at the smash repairers, or they don't worry about it, but they bear the loss when they try and sell it because it'll be worth less. See, they still have to bear the cost. Either way, someone has to pay. Either the person who incurs the pain or bears it, or the person who experiences it has to bear the cost. And friends, when someone wrongs you, either you can make them pay or you can pay. But someone has to pay, right? Now, how does that work when we're not talking about money? Normally, when someone does something to you that hurts you, you experience some type of loss. So it might be a loss of pride or dignity or self-respect or self-esteem or reputation. And so there's a cost that you feel because you've been hurt, right? And it pains you and you feel like the person owns you. So what do? Well, you can either make them pay. You gossip. You slander. You cut up their reputation. you revenge. You know, you lash out at them. You give them a mouthful. You really make them feel guilty, and you give it to them hard, abuse them. Or you can go, you know, a bit more passive aggressive, ignore them. You know, avoid contact. You can just be unpleasant. Let them know you're not happy in subtle ways. And as you do those things, and as they suffer from either what you do or what other happens to them from other circumstances, you feel the debt coming down to the point where you feel it's been paid off, and then you're willing to forgive. But what's that have the effect of doing? You make others pay, it turns you into a horrible person, doesn't it? You don't turn out to be the person Jesus wants you to be. It sort of drives you the opposite direction. You become bitter, mean-spirited towards people who wrong you, sniping and grumbling, and really unpleasant to be around, and it just robs you of joy in life. What's the alternative? Well, you pay. You absorb the costs. So when you want to lash out, you don't. When you want to snipe and you want to gossip, you hold your tongue. When you want to hurt them, you refrain. And as you refuse to go there, not only does it help stop you from becoming bitter and angry and self-righteous, but it bit by bit, as you absorb that pain, you can forgive. Now you might say, oh, but that's going to hurt. You know, that I've been so hurt. You're asking me to absorb that and to deal with that? But friends, that's what forgiveness means. We've got to absorb the pain, the cost of people done to us. And it will hurt because you're paying the debt instead of making them pay. And as you forgive, your heart softens and you see the debt coming down and you're able to forgive them. And you're free from that bitterness and that angst and that hurt, that internal angst that's going on within you. Okay, there you go. Easy, right? Go and do. Pull up your socks, try harder. No, it's not as easy as that, is it? How do you do that? How do you put that forgiveness into practice? Well, Jesus, in this little passage, gives us two really helpful resources. First of all, he gives us a method and he gives us a motive. The method is a very practical process for us. It's there in verses 15 to 17. He's talking to disciples. He said, if your brother sins against you, that is, he's talking to situations where someone in church has hurt you, or they've been mean to you, or they've just offended you, or slandered you, or done something that's fractured the relationship. What do you do? Jesus says, go to them and point out the fault and deal with it. If your relationship with a person's damaged or fractured because they've done something to you, this is the way to go to them and let them know and resolve it. And the way to not to deal with it is to gripe or to grumble or to lash out and whinge about it. It's to go to the person, explain what they've done, how they've offended and upset you. And the whole purpose in doing that is not to go and tell them off and make them feel guilty, because all that's going to do is make you feel better because you've made them pay. The whole purpose is to go and win your brother over, says Jesus, to reconcile, to restore that fractured relationship. It's interesting here at Pico South, for those of your parents here at the school, you'll have seen this, that the principal and the staff here have just implemented a thing called restorative practices. Some of you, others in the teaching game might have come across this. And what it's about is aiming to help teachers and students and families build and maintain and restore relationships that have been damaged. And it does this by bringing about a sense of remorse and restorative action on the part of the offender and forgiveness on the victim. And the kids were all sent home with little business cards with questions on the card to help them work through that, the process to work through that reconciliation in a situation where they've been hurt. And so there's some questions like, you know, what do you think when you found out this happened? How have you or others been hurt? What do you think needs to happen to make things right? So it's interesting that the school here is recognizing that there needs to be a process to restore and reconcile fractured relationships. And that's what Jesus is saying here. Recognize the hurt that's been done and go, here's a process to go and help you work it out. So he says, go and explain to the person and show them what they've done so that you can reconcile, that they can understand and you can restore that relationship. Now, he goes on to explain what to do if they're unwilling to listen and reconcile. We don't have to go time to go into that. But the point is that there is this process that Jesus gives us that is really helpful for us to follow to reconcile with others. Now, it's not rocket surgery, is it? It's not complicated. It's Jesus just saying, identify with a person, okay? Go to them in grace and love. Say, our relationship has been fractured. This is hurt. Not to tell them off, but to restore. Now, the second thing, and I think the ultimate thing that's going to help us more to be people who are willing to reconcile and forgive, is Jesus gives us a motive. And that motive comes from the compassion and the forgiveness that the king shows towards the servant. So you see there in verse 27, despite the massive debt the servant owes the king's heart goes out for the man and he cancels the debt. And it's interesting when you look at this phrase, took pity on, in the Gospels, that phrase is almost used exclusively for Jesus as he takes compassion, as his heart goes out for others. So his heart goes out for the crowds often, for the leper, the blind man, for a grieving widow who are in need, who are broken. And he has compassion on them. And of course, the king in the parable is pointing us to the ultimate king, which is Jesus, who has compassion on us in our brokenness and our need for forgiveness. And so friends, if we're going to identify with a person who's hurt us, if we're going to show compassion towards a person and pity towards them, then for our heart to go out towards them, that's hard, isn't it? When we're hurting, when they've hurt us, it's not easy for us, our heart to go out to them. So how do we do it? Well, we remember how on the cross Jesus identified with us. We remember how on the cross Jesus showed compassion to us. We remember how on the cross Jesus' heart went out for those who were against him when he said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. How on the cross he paid the $18 billion debt that you and I have no hope of paying. Remember how on the cross he absorbed the cost for you. It wasn't money, but it was him dealing with the wrath of the Father as he absorbed the full wrath for the times that we have lied, bullied, hated, resented, slandered, cheated, bullied, and hurt others. He absorbed that cost for us so your debt could be cancelled. You know, when the servant in the parable is choking his fellow servant when he should have been showing grace and mercy, what he's doing there is he's acting like the judge and king, isn't he? And friends, the only way you and I are going to stop ourselves from being like that servant, holding on to grudges and refusing to forgive others and acting like judge and king over others, is if we see afresh the grace of the King who has forgiven us. And when you do, when you see how much he's cancelled your debts and how he identified with you on the cross, then, thanks, Neela. Is it that bad, is it? Okay. Thank you. When you see what he's done, how he's identified with you, how he's cancelled your debt, then it frees you to unlock the gates of forgiveness with others. I want to finish with a story here of Corrie ten Boom. You might have come across this story. She was a lady who lived in the Netherlands in World War II. She was famous for protecting and smuggling Jews away from Germans. And she and her entire family were caught and arrested and sent to the notorious Ravensbrück concentration camp in Germany. When they arrived at the concentration camp, they were forced to throw all their belongings into the centre of the room. They were forced to strip naked, put all their clothes in the centre of the room, and walk in front of all these guards into a shower room. Total humiliation. Corrie's sister Betsy died at Ravensbrück, but miraculously, Corrie was released because of a processing error. She was freed and able to get out of there. 2 years after the war in 1947, she was living in Germany as a teacher. And she says in her autobiography, "It was at a church service in Munich that I saw him, the former SS man who had stood guard at the shower room door in the processing center at Ravensbrück. He was the first of our actual jailers that I had seen since that time. And it was suddenly it was all there. The room full of mocking men, the heaps of clothing, Betsy's pain-blanched face. He came up to me as the church was emptying, beaming and bowing. 'How grateful I am for your message, Fraulein,' he said. 'To think that, as you say, he has washed my sins away.' His hand was thrust out to shake mine, and I, who had preached so often on the need to forgive, kept my hand at my side. Even as the angry, vengeful thoughts boiled in me, I saw the sin of them. Jesus Christ had died for this man. Was I going to ask for more? 'Lord Jesus,' I prayed, 'forgive me and help me to forgive him.' For a long moment, we grasped each other's hands, the former guard and the former prisoner. I had never known God's love so intensely as I did then." See, for Corrie ten Boom, forgiveness came at a great cost. She had to put aside her natural instincts to hate and to revenge him, but she bore the pain of forgiveness herself. She absorbed it. And she was able to do so as she remembered Jesus cancelled his debt as well as hers. As she remembered that on the cross, Jesus identified with him as well as her. And so her heart was able to go out to him just as Jesus' heart had gone out to her. And friends, I know forgiveness and reconciliation isn't easy. It will mean absorbing the pain and the hurt you've experienced to do so, but it's the only way you'll free yourself from that snare of anger and bitterness that you'll carry around in your heart if you don't. But when you look to the cross and you see the size of the debt that the King has cancelled for you, and you see how his heart went out for you, then it frees us to do the same with others. Amen.